Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, as promised, the author of Secrets from Heaven, Hidden Treasures of Faith in the Parables and Conversations of Jesus, Father Sebastian Walsh, our guest this hour. And often we talk about the Bible with Father. We talk about theological issues. Sometimes we talk about philosophical issues. And today we're going to do a little bit of philosophy with Father Walsh. He is well prepared as both a philosopher and theologian. And we're going to talk about doing bad for good results. Why can't we do that? Or if we can, how much can we? Father Sebastian Walsh is a Norbertine priest from St. Michael's Abbey, where they're building a beautiful new Abbey church. The brush fires tried to get near it in recent weeks, but they couldn't. Angels defended it. Father, I don't know. Maybe I'm exaggerating. I'm not sure. Father Walsh, thanks for being with us.
I can be sure any time that something good happens, the angels are involved. So I'm sure the angels helped.
I am so glad that I was speaking to a Thomist when I said that, so because nothing good happens without that, with some help from the angels. That's right. They've been given that job by God himself. So, Father, thanks for being with us. I do think that one of the great temptations, maybe the greatest temptation that we face, is to do good, but to bring about good in ways that are unworthy or are wrong. Mm-hmm. It's a great, mm-hmm. great temptation. I mean, I'm also tempted to do evil. Not everybody else is, but I do face those. But there's something special about the temptation to do good via evil means. Mm-hmm. It kind of twists or perverts the goodness in us in a very strange way. So why can't we bring about good by doing bad?
Yeah. So fundamentally, the reason is because the universe is put together by God in an ordered way. And that means that even if you tried to do good by evil means, you couldn't do it. It's a little bit like trying to hold up a really heavy item by means of a bad link on a chain. You need to have a good chain and all the links have to be good. So if one of the links is bad, then you won't hold up the heavy thing. It's just the law of physics that heavy things won't be held up by things that aren't strong. And it's the same way that good results and fundamentally, ultimately, happiness is what we're aiming for. Our happiness cannot be achieved by evil means. And therefore, God has so ordered the universe that even if you tried, you couldn't bring about a good result by an evil means.
Yeah.
You could bring about something that looks outwardly good, physically good in some respect, but it wouldn't be morally good for you. You wouldn't be a better person because of it.
One way that has gained some popularity in a very Catholic country, and would probably be popular with other people, is this idea that we can wipe out drug abuse if we just attack drug dealers. As a matter of fact, in the case of the country I'm thinking about, they're actually murdering drug dealers in order this plague of what drugs does to families and to individuals, it probably in a certain way could be wiped out if you just killed every drug dealer. So help me understand, mm-hmm. where is that? How do you say to the person in that situation, that's wrong, you can't do that, you have to suffer the other thing? You know?
Yeah. So take that case there. Let's say that someone is doing harm, and one way for you to stop them from doing harm is for you to murder them. Okay. Let's just bring it down to the case of an individual making an individual choice about their own life. Huh? So, you see this person and he's stealing from your brother. And he's stealing a lot of money from your brother. And so one way of stopping him from stealing would be to murder him, huh?
Right.
Well, that won't make you a good person, right? Socrates, in many of his dialogues, including the Gorgias, he makes the point that it's not suffering evil that makes you bad. It's doing evil that makes you bad, right?
Yeah.
And it's better to suffer evil than to do evil, because you're not a bad person if you suffer evil, but you are a bad person if you do evil.
Oh.
And so that's what would happen fundamentally in a case like that. It would be better if you had to choose between the two of doing something that's intrinsically evil as opposed to suffering something that's harmful to you but doesn't make you bad. Obviously, you choose the one that doesn't make you bad.
So that's true for society too then. This society cannot, the society that chooses murder as the means of ending drug abuse is, it cannot become a good society that way.
That's right. Though I always caution, you know, society is not a moral agent. The individuals in society are.
Okay.
And therefore, you know, you'd have to impute the moral fault to either the legislators in the society,
right,
the people who enforce the laws. Someone, it'd have to be an individual people would be made bad by means of it. So, eugenics is a great example of that in Nazi Germany, right? There was an attempt in Nazi Germany to get rid of, you know, certain genetic defects, which are certainly kinds of evil, right? It's bad for people to be born with birth defects and things like that. And the means they were using was to kill all the kids that had, you know, these birth defects so they wouldn't pass them on, right? And eugenics. Right. And that was imputable to, you know, first of all, the leadership in that country and also to those people who carried out the eugenics program. And as a consequence, the whole society was made bad because the people in the society were made bad.
Huh? I see. So there's some different terminology here that we might cover. By the way, if you'd like to ask your moral questions of Father Sebastian Walsh, particularly about this idea of doing bad to accomplish good, you might think about murder, you might think about torture, you might think about eugenics, as Father said. There are many others. Often in our society today, suicide is presented as a good in some situations. Mm-hmm. Why do we say no to that, not just as Catholic people, but Father cited Aristotle, who I don't know if you know this, was not a Catholic. 888-318-7884 is the number.
We hope he is now.
We do indeed.
He is now.
888-318-7884 is the place to call and ask your question. So some different philosophical names that are given to this. One, consequentialism. What is consequentialism?
Yeah, so consequentialism is a moral theory that says we should evaluate the goodness or the badness, the rightness or the wrongness of a moral act based upon the consequences of that act. So I tally up all the different effects or the consequences of the act, and I say, you know, if I put a little kind of tally and I say, did I do this much good or this much evil or whatever, did it end up overall having a bad consequence or bad consequences, or overall did it have good consequences? And so you're looking at the act not based on the act itself and what it is in itself, but you look at it based upon what kind of consequences can follow from the act that you reasonably foresee would follow from the act, right? So to take an example, kind of an extreme example, you say, well, there's this guy who says, if I torture this baby, then he won't shoot two people. And so I look at that as a consequentialist and I say, well, I guess it's better for one person to die than for two people to die. So it's better for me to torture the baby. Right? I just look at the consequences of the act. I don't look at the intrinsic reasonableness of what I'm doing. And then I make a moral choice there. But it's obvious that that kind of decision-making ignores what's most fundamental in a moral choice, and that is determining whether what you're doing is actually reasonable in itself and whether it's in itself capable of bringing about a good.
So then what is proportionalism? Proportionalism is another way of kind of justifying doing evil in the service of good.
Yeah, proportionalism is closely related to consequentialism, but the main focus of proportionalism is to look at both the good and the evil effects and things that have to do with the act, that circumstances around the act. And it says, look at the proportion between these things. Is there a sufficient proportion so that I can, you know, based upon whatever it is I'm choosing, whatever effects I'm getting, is there a sufficient proportion between the good effects and the bad effects that will justify me doing this act, right? That either I will get the greater good or I will at least do the lesser evil in the case. And it suffers from much the same problem that consequentialism does. It, like consequentialism, doesn't look at the very essence of the act. It doesn't look at the very nature of the act itself and tell you whether or not that's reasonable, right?
Yeah.
So you simply with proportionalism, you have a kind of an ends justifies the means approach to things. And while that might work in a few cases where the means that you're using is good, When the means that you're using is bad, it'll never work. It'll never actually bring about the good, not through itself, huh?
So how does Catholic moral teaching then differ from these? I mean, what would the Catholic view about how to go about making these decisions be?
Yeah, so the Catholic view of Catholic moral teaching says that apart from the intentions of the person involved, apart from the different circumstances and consequences and effects of the act, there's also something intrinsic to the act itself. And that's determined by what's called the object of the moral act. Okay, it's a very thing that you're choosing to do, huh? And reason sees, human reason sees that the human body, the human soul, has various abilities, various powers, and that each of those abilities in the human soul and the human body have a purpose, right? So reason can see the purposes of things and the order among things, and if we choose to do something, for example, reason sees that eating is something that you do with your digestive system, right? You eat with your mouth and you digest with your digestive system. It sees the purpose of that. Yeah. And that you see with your eyes and you hear right. with your ears. And so reason sees it's unreasonable to try and eat with my ears. If I take a carrot and stick it in my ear, there's something wrong there. Reason says, you know, that you can't justify trying to eat with your ears based upon some good that's going to come as a result of it, right? It's not, your ear is not for eating, huh?
Yeah.
And similarly, you have other abilities. You, for example, even in your soul, your non-bodily powers, your mind has as its intrinsic purpose to know truth. And your will has its intrinsic purpose to love the good, right? And your power of speech as its intrinsic purpose to communicate what's in your soul to someone else, right? Outwardly. And so you can see, for example, it's intrinsically evil to lie, right? To try to intentionally deceive someone, right? To intentionally tell someone something that's not in your soul, because that's contrary to the very intrinsic purpose. And regardless of what effects you might think you'll get out of lying, it's still never justifiable. Huh? So yeah. Catholic moral tradition says we look at the very act itself and we ask whether or not that is reasonable. We look at the object of the moral act, and based on that, we determine whether or not we should do the act or not. And then we take into account the intention and the circumstances as well. We take all three into account. But remember the analogy that I gave you about the chain, right?
Yes.
If
okay.
If it's one weak link in the chain, the whole chain's bad. If the object is bad, then no good circumstance and no good intention can make it good. There's right. no way of making a bad act good. Whereas proportionalism and consequentialism say, I can always revise an act, and even if it's, you know, bad under this circumstance, I can always make it a bad act good, or vice versa.
Right. So if someone, for example, if I am tempted to lie in order, I don't know, to smooth the social situation, or to, you know, I don't know, protect myself from the consequences of an action that I've taken otherwise, that maybe, you know, for whatever the good I'm trying to accomplish, the chain is not going to work, because the lying itself, the actual object of my act, is bad. You got a bad
That's
thing
right.
there. Okay.
That's right.
Okay.
It might accomplish the end that you're looking for, which is namely to avoid pain.
Yeah.
Right? To avoid an uncomfortable social situation, right? You
right.
lie about something, you think, I think your outfit looks wonderful or something like that. But the truth of the matter is that it's still making you bad, right?
Yeah.
So on the one hand, you're avoiding discomfort, but at the cost of being a bad person, you know,
yeah.
the cost of being someone who's a liar.
Okay, so I have to say the classic one that upsets people here all the time is about the use of the most concrete example of a general objection is the use of nuclear weapons against cities, where we say no, the Catholic position is no, you can't attack, but people will go directly to consequentialist arguments, but this would happen
yeah.
if you don't, and this would, so I'm going to pose that to you when I come back. Because we have to take a break real quick, and then I invite the caller, if you have a question about how to avoid doing evil and why to avoid doing evil in order, even when the good is an overwhelming good that you might be wanting to accomplish. 888-318-7884. I just thought another one. We just got it last hour. A caller actually asked Bishop Paprocki this. Why in the case of rape, in order to protect the mother, can't you abort the child who is produced mm-hmm. by that? Mm-hmm. So again, right. we get into the consequent. We go almost immediately to the consequentialist or proportionalist arguments, and we'll talk about why the Catholic Church rejects those and embraces a very different kind of morality, one that may be more difficult, but is also much more beautiful. 888-318-7884 is the number.
There's only one Catholic Answers Live.
The Aquinas Writing Advantage Program is part of Homeschool Connections' set of online courses for your Catholic homeschool. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
There is tremendous power in prayer, because when we acknowledge that we don't have the power, but God does, things then begin to move for our good. Remember Matthew 19:26. But Jesus looked at them and said to them, "With men, this is impossible, but with God, all things are possible." Now that's power.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. Our guest is Father Sebastian Walsh, who has written one of our favorite books here at Catholic Answers. Everyone who reads it goes, "Oh my gosh, that book was beautiful." And the book is called Secrets from Heaven, Hidden Treasures of Faith in the Parables and Conversations of Jesus. Father Sebastian Walsh is a Norbertine priest from the Abbey of St. Michael to the north of us here in California. Our number is 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. We're talking about some moral propositions that are made in the modern world, as a matter of fact, are often lived by in the modern world, that in fact the Catholic Church teaches. We talked particularly about consequentialism and proportionalism, but essentially these are theories or moral theories that suggest it's all right sometimes to do things that are that may be normally bad or would normally be obviously bad. It's all right to do them sometimes in order to get a good result. 888-318-7884. We're processing the calls at the moment. So, Father, I'm going to go back to the two that I asked you about. The use of nuclear weapons, for example, to end a war. Millions of lives might be saved with a single nuclear weapon that would take out one city. It seems to many people obvious that you should use the nuclear weapon.
Yeah, so, and that's not just a theoretical question, because it was the question that was weighed in World War II when they decided to drop the bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the two different bombs there. And truth be told, if you're a consequentialist, you look at that and you say, well, we tabulate the number of lives that would be lost in a prolonged, you know, engagement with Japan and the Pacific. You know, we look at the number there and we say, well, maybe that's going to be 300,000 people or something like that. And if we drop these bombs, we kill 200,000 people or something.
Well, a net gain of 100,000 lives is what the consequentialist says. Yeah.
That's exactly right. But he never looks at this question. He never asks the question, is it okay to take the lives of innocent civilians who are non-combatants, who are not fighting you? They're just living there peacefully in their country, right? They're not the ones fighting. They're not the ones attacking you, right? And is it okay to take the lives of innocent people, including small children, women, right? Non-combatants. Yeah. As a means to that end. And even if it were one person, one innocent person they had to murder in order to save 300,000 lives, it would not be okay, right? It would not be okay. And that's because murder in and of itself never brings about a good, right? Are there things they could have done? Let me give an example of something that perhaps they could have done. They could have dropped a nuclear bomb off the coast so that they could see, look, here's the kind of military power we have. You're not going to win this war you should give up now, you know, that sort of thing. You could drop a nuclear bomb on a fleet of, you know, Navy vessels that are coming to attack you or something like that. Those are all things where you're defending yourself or you know, against aggressors, or where you're, there's a kind of combatant relationship there where you know that these are people who are in a combative position. But you can't kill someone who's an innocent person. And I want to point out one of the perhaps unforeseen consequences of that act. Think of all the people in Japan who lost family members in those two bombings. And think about the anger, the bitterness they have, that their innocent grandmother or little child or niece or nephew, the innocent little toddler, they were all killed. And the animosity that is caused in their soul by the injustice, the anger, are you really sowing seeds of peace by doing something like that, by doing something intrinsically evil? Or are you really just building up kind of an anger, a hatred for the future? Huh? So that's another thing people don't think about.
888-318-7884, our number. In a certain way, you have to discipline your mind on this one, because the mind does rebel when you put one person up against 300,000. In a certain, I'm not advocating here, Father. I'm just saying that we're emotional creatures, and emotionally we go, I know it's horrible, but I just want to kill the one person and save the 300,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well,
I mean, I don't want to. I don't want you to think I really want to kill that person. But you, I'm just saying, it's going to turn into confession here in a minute, Father.
Well, we'll have to take this one off the air if that's the case.
Okay.
The thing to see here, the way to really be free from that, is to see there's no intrinsic reason that connects the murder of an innocent person and the salvation of the 300,000 or however many people.
I see, yeah.
That's what really needs to happen. You know, there was a movie years ago. It was one of these, it was the Batman, and there was a Joker in it. And I don't remember the title of it, but the movie was basically kind of it seemed like an argument for nihilism. And it was setting up all these moral dilemmas. And one of the dilemmas was that the bad guy, the Joker, had said, if you don't murder this one man, if you don't kill this innocent man over here, I'm going to blow up a whole hospital. Right?
Yeah.
And people thought, well, that's what you got to do. You got to save the 1,000 lives in the hospital. But think about it. What if the guy successfully ended up, and in the movie, what happened is they don't murder the guy and the hospital gets blown up. But think of it this way. What if they do murder the guy and then the Joker just decides, I'm going to blow up the hospital anyway? Then immediately becomes apparent that murdering that man had no connection to the actual salvation of the 1,000 people.
Right.
Really, the cause was the will of the bad guy. It had nothing to do with you murdering that person. So there's really no intrinsic connection. There's also another movie, though it may have been made into a movie. There was a book, I think it was called Silence. It was by a Japanese author, and it was about...
Oh, sure. Martin Scorsese made it into a movie, and I'm forgetting the author's name at the moment. Yeah, it's a horrific movie, but I know what you're talking about. You can either... blaspheme the Lord, and then
the torture is, if you don't blaspheme the Lord, then the tortures will continue to torture these Christians, huh?
Yeah.
And so the guy decides he should blaspheme the Lord so that they'll stop being tortured. But he could have blasphemed the Lord, and the guy could have just kept torturing them.
Right.
It had no real connection to the desired outcome. And that's my point, is that God has made the universe in an ordered way, and therefore things that really are good will necessarily result in the good effects that you desire. They won't just happen to, you know, by chance or by someone else's will result in that. And so you're not really saving anyone if you murder that one person. You're not saving the 300,000 lives by murdering one person. That's not there. No, there's no intrinsic connection there.
Let's go to Alan in Portland, Oregon, listening on Modern Day Radio. Alan, your question for our guest, Father Sebastian Walsh.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm glad you guys are talking about this subject. It was a subject that my men's group was just discussing this morning. Very same stuff. And, so I was just listening to how, Father, you said there's no connection between the murder of one and the salvation of the other. That's a contrived connection.
Yeah.
basically. So a situation that was put to us today by one of the guys was, he said it's a classic trolley problem. Basically, an oncoming train is coming and it's going to hit five workers on the railroad. Mm-hmm. But you have a switch that could switch it to divert it to a different track where it would just only kill one. What is the moral thing to do? And something about that situation struck me as, well, this isn't realistic because it seems to paint a very black and white picture where there is no God. It's missing really key pieces. And I guess I just want your take on how do you answer someone who proposes that kind of situation and then expects you to make that.
Okay, he's going to have to do it after the break, though, because the music's starting there, Alan. So we're going to have to do it. We'll solve the trolley problem when we come back. And I assume there's going to be some a reference to Double Effect in order to solve the problem. But I'll find out. I don't know this for a fact, but we'll find out when we come back with Father Sebastian Walsh, our guest. And then there's about a million people on the line, so we'll let you ask your moral questions for Father Walsh right after this.
Let us help you with your question today on Catholic Answers Live.
If you spend any time on Twitter, Facebook, or mainstream media, you're probably familiar with the litany of slogans that skeptics employ to rescue you from the foolish belief that God exists. The constant onslaught seems to leave people with the idea that they have no alternative but to embrace atheism. How can a Christian respond? In One Less God Than You, John DeRosa breaks down 20 of the most common atheist challenges and shows you how to craft effective answers. Atheism is more aggressive and widespread than ever. Read One Less God Than You and prepare yourself to respond with the joyful truth that God is real. To get your copy of One Less God Than You, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
To many people, even many Christians, purgatory is a fantasy, or worse, a wicked lie invented by the church to make salvation complicated and keep people in fear. But I'm here to tell you that purgatory is fact, not fiction. The Bible supports it, Christians have historically believed in it, and it makes theological sense. In my new book, Purgatory is for Real, I provide the evidence and reasoning to help you understand this controversial doctrine and demonstrate how it's actually a joyful, hopeful reality, not something shadowy and mysterious, but a sign of God's love and mercy. To get your copy of Purgatory is for Real, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. There's a TV show on called The Good Place that plays with the trolley problem. And so lots of people are familiar with the trolley problem now. And it has been posed to us by our friend Alan in Portland, Oregon, who's listening on Modern Day Radio. And this makes me so happy that your men's group was talking about this. That makes me just feel so good about the future of our society, that there are men's groups who are meeting and talking about serious things, Alan. Essentially, the problem of Father, Father Sebastian Walsh is our guest, and Father is explaining that we can't do evil to bring about good. That's a basic moral law. It's not one that's only known to the Catholic Church. It's known to reasonable people throughout history, but is certainly held and proclaimed by the Catholic Church. So Alan says, look, you're sitting by the side of the trolley tracks. Here comes a trolley out of control, rolling down the hill. And if the trolley goes one way, it's going to kill five people. If it goes the other way, it's going to kill one person. And you pull the lever to make it avoid the five people, but it kills that one person. Haven't you done evil to bring about good? That's the classic trolley problem. Father, help us out of it.
Great. So this is a good example that helps to distinguish between the consequences of an act and the object of the act. So this would be a really good test case to show the difference between consequentialism and a traditional Catholic morality. So let me give you two versions of the trolley problem. The one version is that the trolley's coming down and it's going towards the five people. You pull the lever and it goes down the other track and it hits the one person on the other track. That's version one and kills him. Version two, the trolley's coming down towards the five people. You run over and you shoot the guy, the one guy on the track, and then you switch the lever and the trolley runs over a dead guy, right? And then you get the same result, right? One dead guy. What's the difference between those two cases? In the one case, what you have is you directly did an act of murder, right? You're the object and the intention, the very object that you were intending in your act was to kill someone. You murdered the guy, and then you let the trolley go on his side, huh? Whereas in the case where you're just pulling the lever for the trolley, you're not, the object there is to switch the trolley from one lane to the other, and it's not intrinsically related to killing people, right? It happens that there's someone on the track, and you foresee as an effect of the act that it will kill someone. But switching, you know, trolley car lanes is not intrinsically evil one way or the other, but it might have an effect that you foresee, and that's way different than an object where you're directly intending the death of someone, okay? So in that case, what you have is the principle of double effect. And the principle of double effect says that as long as what you're doing isn't intrinsically bad, right, then you can look at the effects, and if both effects are going to be evil, you can choose the one with the lesser evil, and it can still be a morally good act. So the answer, when all said and done, in this kind of strange hypothetical, which probably never has happened in the history of the world and never will, but in the strange hypothetical, the answer is you pull the lever so that it goes down the track with the one person. That's assuming that the five people and the one person, there's nothing else you know about them other than the fact that they're human beings, right? There might be some other factor involved that could cause you to change your decision, you know. But in any case, from the standpoint of that moral dilemma, it's not morally wrong to change the direction of the trolley. That's not intrinsically evil. It would be intrinsically evil to go up and kill a guy and then change the direction of the trolley so he runs over a dead guy or something.
And I have to say, this requires a fine distinction that many people are unwilling to make. And I have to say, this is what strikes me as part of the moral danger of our era, is people just roll their eyes and go, well, you're saying the same thing. You're doing a bad thing to... And they will not listen to the fact that, no, the principle of double effect is actually a way of adhering to the good and doing the good, making sure that you're doing the good that you can do and that you are avoiding evil. This is not at all the same thing. But I do feel like our society is just unwilling often to make fine moral distinctions. And I'm not saying that this one is terribly fine, but is unwilling.
There's a famous line in Chesterton's, I think it's in Chesterton's Orthodoxy, where he says, fine points make a big difference. He says, one small change in vocabulary and all the finest art in Europe would have been destroyed. He's talking about the iconoclast heresy.
He
says, fine distinctions can sometimes have immense consequences. So sometimes, you know, a lot hinges on fine distinctions.
Huh? Alan, are you satisfied?
Can I ask a follow-up question?
No. Okay, yeah, you can. I'm just teasing. Sorry about that, Alan. Go ahead.
So the thought experiment, to me, it just occurred to me what the phrase was I was thinking of. It basically presents a false dichotomy because it excludes so many other real factors that happen in real life. Mm-hmm. It makes me wonder, though, would you agree that there are no real situations where you either have one choice or the other? Those always only seem to exist in movies or in, you know,
I will say this.
Go ahead.
Will say this, that there might be real life situations where you only have one choice or the other, but there are no real life situations where both choices have to be bad. That's what a Catholic thinks, and it's not just Catholics. You know, like I said, Aristotle thought the same thing. The moral order is intelligible. The universe is set up in a reasonable way by a reasonable God who's ordered things so that you never have to choose evil. There's no situation where both of your two choices have to be evil. There might be situations where you've got one choice or the other. That can really happen, right? So
Well, the I ask you this as a priest and not just as a philosopher. Often we have very limited knowledge and time to make decisions. And I think sometimes people rack themselves with guilt over their life because at a moment they made a decision and later upon reflection they realize what I did was wrong and evil. But you one thing that is true, while you may not ever have to choose evil, you don't always have perfect clarity. As a matter of fact, you never have perfect clarity, and you get stuff wrong. You make terrible mistakes sometimes, mm-hmm. even moral mistakes, where you chose the wrong thing. On later reflection, you might suffer your whole life saying, "Why did I do that?"
Yeah, boy, as a priest, that's really something that you run into a lot. And the number one instance of that is abortion. You get women 30, 40 years later who cannot get over their abortion. They can't believe they're forgiven by God for that. And there's good reason for that. I mean, it's really a fundamental, it strikes at the most fundamental core of your being, right? To destroy your own child like that. And nevertheless, we as Catholics believe that Jesus can fix every problem, right? Stop and think about it. Jesus can raise the dead. There's no problem, no knot so difficult that he can't untie it. No problem that he can't solve. And even in the present, you know, I often tell women who regret their abortion, I say, offer a mass for the baby that you aborted. Ask Jesus to give that child life. Pray now that you know, He'll take into account your prayers now, back then, to give grace to your baby before your baby died, so you can see your baby at the final resurrection. I tell them to do those things because they have to believe that Jesus can fix any problem. Huh? And there's no moral evil we can do that Jesus can't undo. Now, that's speaking to you as a priest. A moral philosopher shrugs their shoulders and just says, I can't help you. You've really done a bad thing.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to live with the guilt of that. Just don't do it again.
Right.
But the Catholic faith tells you there's more. That can be undone.
Yeah. I have to say I've run into it with soldiers and also with people who had to make a decision at the end of a parent's life where they go, if I had more time or if I could have, I wouldn't have made that decision. But you didn't have more time. You didn't have more information. It is what it is. You might look back and go, yeah, that was wrong. What you did was wrong. But you are a human being.
Yeah. And for that reason, it's on the one hand, while you don't justify evil because of that, you do say, okay, look, that mitigates the circumstances. And in the future, acknowledging and realizing later, okay, that was the wrong thing to do, then there's a possibility of repentance, and then you can reverse the evil effects in your own soul. The fact that you did something wrong in such a way that it made you in some way bad, maybe it's not, you know, you weren't malicious, but out of ignorance or out of weakness, you made a bad decision. Well, that recognition that you did something bad now is the source of healing in your soul to change you from the evil that you did to yourself, making yourself bad by doing it. Now you can rectify that through repentance. So it is important to come later on to a deeper understanding of what you did and how it needs to be changed.
So. Alan, thanks for the question. Let's go to Oregon, Modern Day, listening on Modern Day Radio. Isaac, go ahead with your question for Father Sebastian Walsh.
Hello.
Hi, Isaac.
So
go ahead.
My question is regarding the war of America against Japan. And it's about how just war, so in a just war, you have the right to defend yourself and kill your enemy. Mm-hmm. So the question is, if the person is not a combatant carrying a gun, but the person providing material means, let's say a child in a factory, question is that child your enemy that you would have the right to kill them using an atomic bomb to save maybe millions of your soldiers in a protracted invasion or potential guerrilla warfare insurgency?
Yeah, so I guess I would say in a case like that, you have to really look at it on a case-by-case basis. In principle, the answer is that if someone is not directly, as you say, carrying a gun, but is actively providing the means by which the people carrying the guns can kill and shoot you, they're part of the chain of attackers. And so in that regard, that's someone who's a legitimate target that you can attack, and you can say, okay, that person can be attacked and stopped, huh? But you want to use proportionate means to stop them, right? If you can. And obviously, if you're talking about little children or things like that, on a case-by-case basis, you say they couldn't possibly know what they're doing, okay? Now, you're not necessarily obliged. So let's take the case of someone who's not an atomic bomb, but let's say that a factory that's building weapons is identified. You're not necessarily obliged to find out if every single person in that factory is actually contributing to the, you know, in a knowing way to the building of the weapons. It's enough to know that the purpose of this facility is to build weapons to attack you, that you could therefore go and, you know, drop a bomb on that factory and blow it up or something like that. That sort of thing is acceptable in just war theory. And you're not bound to find out all the exact possible details of every single person who could be in there at the time. You can only make reasonable, prudential decisions in cases like that. But if on the other hand, you've got a guy who's, you know, he comes in with a gun and he sees a little kid there, you know, putting together some materials and he's 5 years old, he can't shoot the little kid there knowing that the little kid couldn't possibly know what he's doing. He's got to use some other proportionate means to stop what's happening there. And an atomic bomb just doesn't cut the bill. It's just not precise enough to be able to limit itself to only those who are contributing to the war effort. That's a problem. I mean, in principle, I gave the example where an atomic bomb could be used. The example was you have a naval fleet that's coming to invade the United States, for example, and you drop the bomb on where the ships are, and it destroys all the people who are combatants and contributing to the war effort in that naval fleet. And so in some cases, an atomic bomb would be precise enough, but not just on a city where the majority of people are innocent civilians.
Thanks, Isaac. Appreciate that. We do have to take a quick break before I send you off to the break. And we're going to come back with there's lots of calls for Father on various moral questions, and we're going to get to them. So if you're on the line, hang on the line. But I do want you to know it's November now, and we have a new book for you. November, we spend praying for the dead. And so we're giving 20 Answers Prayer away as the free ebook this month. You just go to shop.catholic.com and you look for the button at the top of the page for the free ebook. Our guest this hour is Father Sebastian Walsh, and he is one of the two authors of this book, and we can highly recommend it to you. Get your free copy of 20 Answers Prayer at shop.catholic.com right now. Just click the button, get your free ebook.
Bringing you the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Want the latest pro-life news? Want it delivered? Sign up. It's free. EWTN Pro-Life Weekly, your source for everything happening now in the fight to protect the sanctity of human life. New episodes delivered every week to your inbox. So if you really want to know,
sign up today.
Go to EWTN.com/pro-life today.
St. Paul's street evangelization isn't like other evangelism you might have seen on the streets. We don't yell, and we don't force anyone to pay attention to us. Instead, St. Paul's Street Evangelization is committed to presenting a positive, passionately Catholic presence to a world hungry for truth. For more information, or to start a chapter of your own, go to www.streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com. It's time to do our part.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Our guest is Father Sebastian Walsh, the author of Secrets from Heaven, Hidden Treasures of Faith, and the Parables and Conversations with Jesus. He also is a philosophy teacher, and he's a priest of the Abbey of St. Michael in Orange County, in the Diocese of Orange. And we're talking about a basic moral question, the question of doing evil to bring about good, something that the Catholic Church, along with other moral philosophers, but certainly not all other moral philosophers, but I don't want you to think that the Catholic Church is alone in promoting this idea, says, no, you may not. You cannot do evil in order to bring about good. As a matter of fact, I think one of the points you were making, Father, is that in our understanding of the moral universe is you won't bring about good. You may bring about a particular good, but you will not in any lasting way bring about good by doing evil.
Yeah, you won't bring about your moral good,
uh-huh.
and it won't achieve your happiness. That's true. You're the agent who's doing the act, and if you're doing an evil act, it'll only make you a bad person. So
we got a ton of people on the line, so let's go to Sharon in Kaiser, Oregon, listening on Modern Day Radio. Sharon, you there with us?
Yes, I am. Hi, Father Walsh. I am an experienced pro-lifer. Hello.
Great.
I'm experienced in pro-life arguments, and my very liberal friends often peg me with this particular issue, perhaps because it's highly political and high profile, but if I'm so pro-life, why don't I advocate more for kids in cages at the border? And so I sense by that argument that they're asking me to vote for, you know, just free-for-all immigration, and I believe that there should be limitations on those things. But of course, I don't advocate for children in cages. However, that is that seems to be what the issue is down there. So I'm looking for a better defense to that statement because it certainly isn't my heart. But I, you know, I'm not just gonna go straight in for that political argument because I know they're beating me. So I just have that question.
All right.
Sure. So let me say this. You are obliged morally to oppose every kind of injustice that you know of. And that includes, you know, children in cages at the border or whatever. If that's assuming that's a real thing and that the children are there held unjustly and they've been separated from their parents unjustly, assuming all those things are the cases, are in fact the case, then you're obliged to oppose that. But you're not obliged to advocate and spend your energy advocating for everything because that would be impossible. I mean, let's face it, if you think about all the injustices, you know, you could do the same thing with regard to practically every kind of injustice that you could imagine, both inside and outside the United States. You know, you can multiply the cases of injustice to practically infinity, and no one can advocate for all those things. And so for someone to criticize you because you're spending your time and your energy advocating for pro-life causes rather than advocating for their cause, well, you can simply say, I'm absolutely against every injustice, but I have to put my time and energy against the ones that I think are the greatest injustices. And among the greatest injustices that we have in our country is that nearly 1 million babies are killed every year in their own mother's womb by abortion. And that far outweighs in magnitude any of the other injustices that are happening in our country. So I choose to spend the predominance of my time advocating for that instead of advocating for the many other injustices that are out there. If you want to advocate for these other injustices, I encourage you to do so in order to prevent those injustices. Someone should do that, and I'm proud of you for doing that. But don't criticize me for not advocating. It's a difference between being opposed to injustice and then putting my time and energy into advocating against an injustice. Those are two different things.
Sharon, thanks for that question. I hope that answer was helpful to you. It was certainly helpful to me. I'm going to remember that for the future. Father, we had a caller who couldn't stay on the line, but I'm fascinated by this question, so I want to ask it. You said you can't do evil to bring about good. And so Antonio, listening in the Woodlands, Texas, on the Catholic Answers Live app, says, is it wrong to harm oneself to help another? For example, donating an organ. You would think the act of taking out one of my kidneys, for example, when it's perfectly healthy, is an evil. So help me out here. How can we justify that?
That's a very helpful question because it makes a very important distinction. And that's a distinction between physical harm or physical evil and moral harm or moral evil. Okay. You can't do moral evil in order to bring about a good, but you can do something that's physically harmful or physically evil to bring about a good. To take a simple example, if you have gangrene in your hand and the only way to save yourself is to cut off the hand, to amputate the hand, huh? Then, even though that's a physical evil to amputate your hand, you're actually doing something that's reasonable and not a moral evil, huh? And out of charity for someone else, if you see that that taking your kidney, one of your kidneys, in such a way that it's not absolutely necessary for your life because you have another healthy kidney, taking one of your kidneys and causing yourself physical harm will result in the saving of another person, then you see that's reasonable morally. Huh? You see that you look at, that's a principle of double effect case, huh? You see that the evil of losing the kidney in relation to the good of someone's life being saved is such that the good of that person's life being saved outweighs the evil of the physical evil of having your kidney removed. And there's nothing intrinsically wrong, right, with removing a body part, provided that there's a good reason for it, right? Moral evil always has to do with doing something unreasonable in itself, huh? Now, an example of that would be to commit suicide so that someone else could harvest your organs, right? That would be unreasonable in itself, right? I kill myself so that they can harvest my organs or something. That's to directly attack your own life in a way that you're doing something unreasonable. So I hope that answers the question.
Thanks, Antonio, for that question. I'm going to go to another caller, but Father, I do want to get to this because this, you just pointed to something that is actually very real in our society right now. This idea, this embrace, really, in many places, horrifying embrace of euthanasia and suicide as goods. But these are classic examples of doing evil in order to bring about a supposed good. For in most instances, the good that's supposed to be brought about is the relief of suffering. So how do we, or would you apply what you've said to this movement for euthanasia and suicide?
Yeah, absolutely. So in this case, again, you look at the very object of the act, and it's intrinsically wrong to take an innocent life. That's intrinsically wrong. Reason sees that innocent people always contribute to the good of society insofar as they're innocent, okay? They contribute to the moral good of the society, right? Even if they're suffering, even if they have difficulties and so forth. And therefore, it's always wrong to deliberately and intentionally take an innocent life, all the more so if it's your own life, right? If it's your own life, it's wrong to do that, huh? Yeah. You have a greater obligation to preserve your own life than your neighbor's life, huh? And therefore, that would be intrinsically evil. Now, this supposed relief of pain that's the result of the suicide, well, truth be told, we have more means now than ever before of relieving pain. And you can do all sorts of things that relieve pain, and that would be acceptable. So, for example, even if you took a very strong painkiller that would shorten your life and hasten your death, because your direct object that you're aiming for is a reduction of pain rather than the killing of the person, then that would be acceptable. You could take a very strong painkiller. And I find it disingenuous that people are arguing for suicide at a time when we've never had better means of dealing with pain. I think the real issue is that people think suicide is a cheap way out instead of taking care of old people. And there's an economic drive behind this. They're trying to murder older people because they see them as a burden on society rather than seeing their moral value to the society. Huh? So,
yes, indeed. Right. So yeah, there is, I'm sure that you are correct. There's also, I think, a desire for self-control, to be in control of oneself and to make decisions for oneself and never to be in a position where one has to, be reliant upon others, which is a kind of selfishness that I don't think people realize it is selfish.
That's a kind of pride. I think about Jesus and the sixth station of the cross, how humiliating it was that Simon of Cyrene had to carry his cross, and what a humiliation that was for Jesus. But if Jesus, the Lord of the universe, accepted that humiliation, we should accept the humiliation of being a burden on others, huh?
Father Sebastian Walsh, thank you for that. Secrets from Heaven, Hidden Treasures of Faith in the Parables and Conversations of Jesus is Father Walsh's book. Father Walsh, may we have your blessing before we go.
Per intercessionem Beatae Virginis et Omnem Sanctorum, benedixit in potentis Patris et Filii et Spiritus Sancti, descendat super vos et mani et semper.
Amen. Thank you so much, Father. What language was that, by the way? Was that Spanish?
That was Latin.
Oh, yeah. I was pretty sure I knew that already. Thank you, Father. Hey, tomorrow's election day, so I won't be here. It's going to take me all day to stand in line and vote. No, that's not true. I'll probably
vote,
get through
vote,
and
vote.
Yeah, get out there
all
and vote.
Catholics, get out there and vote.
And then when you're done voting, join us for 2 hours of beautiful, beautiful, huge, wonderful open forum. See you then, God willing.